The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond.
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 Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 382 of IGN's podcast Beyond, the number one PlayStation podcast in the universe.
Woo!
I am your host, Max Scoville. Hi, I'm new. With me, Brian Altano. Marty Sleva.
Hey, everybody.
And Jared Petty.
Greetings.
All of you guys are more well-known to our audience than I am. This is terrifying. This is a new thing. This is a new generation. I'm scared out of my mind.
You don't have to be scared. You have old orange.
This is homemade morphine.
There we are.
I was explaining this before we started. Of course, in preparation of taking on this massive, just tremendous responsibility of the most popular podcast on IGN, as the new guy, my immune system has just crumbled like a Dickensian orphan in the streets. And I'm fighting off the beginnings of a cold, so that means that I'm basically approaching this like Batman in The Dark Knight Returns towards the end, and I'm just like, I'm gonna fight this with pills the best way I can.
Okay.
Homemade morphine is three emergencies in a liter of water with a 5-hour energy on top.
Yeah. That's not street legal.
I don't think it is.
No.
It's David Blaine street magic.
Greg Miller does chicken wings, you do homemade morphine.
Yeah. So, we should probably address the fact that this is a new thing, and we are not the guys who they're used to. And I really don't want to screw this up, you know. I just want to say hi, hello, everybody. It's really nice to be here.
We wave a lot now.
Yeah. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys. So if you're tuning into this, thank you. And I hope that we can, find our stride, find our rhythm.
And like we were, Max and I were talking about last week on 381, which was Greg and Colin's last episode. So Max and I are going to be on here every week. Well, as much as whatever every week means to me, because I said I was going to be on here every week, and then I was on every other week because they sent me to weird places.
Please just give everyone some level of commitment. half of us will be here always, and none of us will be here never, but some of us will be here sometimes.
This is a labyrinth riddle.
You're like the dad in Boyhood.
Yeah.
You show up every 3 or 4 years. You're like, hey, guys, cats, I got a new guitar. What's up?
But we're going to be this is going to be a different show. Obviously, we're different people. We're not going to try to emulate the amazing thing that Greg and Colin did. But we're going to take what they did best, which was just open a dialogue with the fans, with the community, with the listeners. And this is not us talking to you. This is talking with you, which you're going to see because I printed out notes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody here is attempting to be like a cover version of your favorite band. We just want to make some new music. So let's get out there and smash some guitars.
Yeah. Yep. I think the thing we realized is... No, don't do that.
Okay,
don't
no,
do
that.
They're not going to smash the Vita.
It's broken. It's a lovely handheld.
All right.
Smash the PSP Ghost.
Jeez, I'm sorry about the Vita.
We can, in fact, smash the PSP Ghost.
Smash the Pocket Stations.
So there we go.
All of the Pocket Stations.
That sounds like an album or something. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, an opportunity to come together and celebrate all things PlayStation that are worth celebrating and make fun of all things PlayStation that are worth making fun of.
Exactly.
It's a great combination.
And some of the things are going to stay the same. Some things are going to change. Some segments are going to go away. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some new segments, one of which we're going to debut later, which we're all pretty stoked for.
Ooh.
So it should be cool.
It's sorcery in action.
I'm so excited, you guys.
I cannot believe I'm sitting here. I 2.5 years ago, I was a fan that got invited out to E3 because I had a part in a contest, and I was just walking around going, oh, no, no. Now I'm sitting here on on an episode of Beyond with people I worshipped for years.
Oh,
riveting. I'm just a little overwhelmed.
Worshipping Max is like worshipping a rock star, because then you realize that the rock star has a prescription
morphine
pill
problem.
Addiction.
That's okay. No, yeah. I worship dark gods. I worship, you know, Azathoth and Cthulhu and
is that
Skobald.
First one real?
Yeah.
I like to think that an ancient evil has been awakened.
Yeah,
I don't know where I heard that. I think it was in a game somewhere.
I think you heard it on your shirt. Evil.
I don't worship anything. I don't worship anything I can't spell.
Can't spell? No,
that's a hard rule for me.
So Yogg-Sothoth is probably out.
He's
right?
out. Yeah. Okay, that dude's on its own.
So we're off to a good start talking about PlayStation on this video game podcast. We do want to talk about that. What should we talk about? Like what's going on? I feel like no matter what we do, it's just, you know, someone's going to be huffy about it. So let's just have fun.
Is it? Are you saying that it's time for some news?
News is loose.
Is loose. Why did you sound like a ghost?
So I feel,
the news ghost.
Children's programming. The news is loose.
The Roper Report is typically the news segment.
Yeah.
I have no idea who that is.
That's fine.
Is that like
it was Ebert's partner.
Yeah, that's
in the balcony.
Literally who I thought they were referring to, and I was like, I don't get this joke. And then Greg made a bunch of noises, and it's like, I don't want to pretend to be like in on this joke, and I also I don't know. It feels disingenuous to be like.
Yeah. Let's so the Roper Report might change. If it does, maybe we'll get Chris Roper in here.
So here,
to do the handing of the torch.
Editors of Days Gone By.
Yes, exactly.
In the meantime, we have the news ghost.
The news ghost.
News.
Spooky. obviously. The big thing that was happening all weekend, the news ghost ruined everything. This whole episode is haunted by the news ghost.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
The big thing that happened all weekend was a bunch of leaked playthroughs of The Order 1886 popped up online.
Yep.
And everyone was like, hey, this game is only like 4, 5, 6 hours long.
4, 5, 6, 7, something like that.
Yeah,
3.
That's a big difference there.
That is a big difference.
I mean, it really depends, I guess, if you stop and smell the roses.
Yeah.
If you kind of just peek under every stone. I don't know if that game is full of stones you can peek under.
It has a ton of stones. But we got a ton of emails about this. Everyone in the Facebook group was talking about this. You know, Jody Clark emailed us and said, called this game length gate. I officially don't want to use the term gate in anything anymore.
Yeah, I'm...
But this is game length gate. A bunch of people were sort of comparing this to saying, well, you know, James Hoffman wrote in and said, you know, Journey costs, was this, well, you know, Journey's a 2-hour, 3-hour game. Everyone loves it, but it costs $15 as opposed to $60. So, you know, can you really justify that? And so we want to sort of, you know, I just want to pose a question to you guys. Like, are you fine with, you know, a $60 AAA game, you know, only taking one or two sittings?
Depends on how good it is. I mean, I haven't played this yet, so I don't know what it's going to be like.
Right.
But I can think of games that I wish were shorter, would have been better if they were shorter. Mm-hmm. I think about Alien Isolation, which would have been a better game if it were shorter.
Absolutely.
I think about Knack, which would have been a much better game if it were shorter.
Yeah.
These were you know, both high-budget titles that would have been significantly improved by less length, less filler. So there are times I'm okay with it. I realize games are expensive. I also know that they cost a whole lot of money to make, and at some point, they're either we're going to have to pay more or get less game per purchase. And if it's fun, you know, I think Portal 2, that's a short game and it's a masterpiece.
Absolutely.
So there are times it works. I would prefer if they have to choose between give me a short good experience or a long mediocre experience that they've padded out, I'll take the short one every time.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing. No one ever says, you know, this game that I spent 200 hours playing should cost more.
Yeah.
No one ever says that, but they do the opposite version of that argument, which is this game I only played for 3 or 4 hours should cost less. Mm-hmm. And I don't really agree with that. I mean, not necessarily. And I think part of it is because A, I'm older and I'm an adult and like I buy my own games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I don't really have sort of the time I used to have to invest hundreds of hours in games. But I think it is really important to understand the vision of a developer and a storyteller to sort of say, our story is this long. Now, The Order might have its own set of problems, right? We don't know. We haven't reviewed it yet. A review will be coming out, what, Thursday?
Yes, it'll be Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
Comes out Friday.
So we'll know then the actual quality of the entire experience. But taking away all of that, what we're debating here is length. And I don't necessarily feel that everything should be chastised for being shorter than something that's 100 hours long. I know people want the most bang for their buck. I totally understand that. But maybe you're looking in the wrong place, because I think that sometimes experiences are better when they're shorter, and we should celebrate those instead of forcing them to pad themselves to make your wallet feel better.
So I think that a term that I harp on a lot is brevity is the soul of wit.
Yeah.
You know, which is really if you can, I'm the horrible example of this. And also, I love that we are having an hour long podcast to discuss conciseness is pretty important.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah,
I mean, we're hypocrites. Yeah. That's what we do.
Totally. But I mean, I think that one thing that's really important to note is the difference. If you are an adult man who can spend $60 on a game, kind of on a whim, and be like, hey, you know, my girlfriend has to work this weekend, I'm going to go and buy a game, and that's not like 2 months worth of allowance or whatever. Yeah. Or that's not you mowing lawns. You know, that's an entirely different, you know, approach to take than if you're somebody who gets two games a year.
Yeah. Yep.
And I mean, it comes down to, you know, replay value and stuff. I mean, games are, they can be like the complexity of a Nerf ball, or they can be like a massive novel. You know?
Yeah.
Like I mean, like Peggle and Dragon Age Inquisition are both video games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Both fun video games.
Yeah.
Worth playing.
But totally different in every possible way. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, I think there's unicorns in both. But, you know, it's
in point of fact, there are unicorns in both. Yes.
I hate the trudge of games where it's like you're not saying anything, you know, like when it's just stretched out, when it is padded.
Yeah.
I think that there's a huge difference between, you know, like an epic RPG where it's like, yeah, this is an 80-hour experience. You are exploring a world. There's a world here, you know. They've said from the get-go that The Order is supposed to be a filmic experience because cinematic has been played out too much. But I'm not really surprised by this because if you look at that game, it's beautiful. They clearly put all of their skill points into the graphics, you know, tree. And
is that how games are made?
Yes, with a tree. they buried some graphics in the backyard and they watered it and watched it grow.
You put a polygon under some fresh dirt and then it grows up there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that I'm actually kind of excited about this news. Like I feel really like a total sham of a man for saying this, but like I don't know. I'm busy with work. I'm busy with a lot of things. I just got a house. Like there's a lot of real life stuff that sometimes gets in the way of shooting werewolves with a thermite gun. Mm-hmm. And to hear that that's not a 12-hour game is sort of a sigh of relief because I want to experience the whole thing. I want to see it start to finish. But I don't want it to be like a thing that takes me a month to do. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head earlier where I'm of a different mind about this now than I would have been 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, totally.
When I was, elementary school through probably even early college when I still had a lot of free time but didn't have a lot of money and I could buy, you know, a very small handful of games every year. Like if I spent my $60 on something and I was like, oh, I finished it in one sitting, like I think I'd be bummed out back then. Games were generally short. I mean, like when I think about the Super Nintendo games I got, like if I got The Lion King for Christmas, I don't think I was complaining that, well, I don't think I ever beat The Lion King because that game's impossible.
Exactly.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. We didn't have save states back then. So a lot of these quote unquote short games actually required a ridiculous amount of time.
Yeah.
It was that
damn Hakuna Matata level.
Oh my God.
There was no ground for like a mile and you had to jump on elephants.
Which doesn't make sense because Africa has a ton of ground.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Africa, but like pictures I've seen, it's a lot of ground.
It's not 90% pits.
Yeah.
And
right, it also has more than two dimensions.
That's true. That as well.
But you know, like it's funny you mention that because I remember growing up coming home from school after just a crappy day, which happens constantly when you're alive. And I would go home and I would beat DuckTales for NES or Chippendales Rescue Rangers because I knew I could beat these games in an hour and get up and afterwards I could be like, I feel better. I just accomplished something. I just beat that stupid cartoon cat with the cigar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You threw apples at him and he died. Yeah.
And I felt good about that. And I don't know if The Order, again, like we don't know about the quality of this game. I don't know if The Order is going to be one of those games where, say, you can beat it in 5 hours. If you're just like, I don't know what I want to do today. I want to fly through this game in 4.5 hours, 5 hours, and get that same sort of feeling of like, I experienced something from start to finish, which is very different than when I play Far Cry for an hour. I'm just like, I want to mess around and blow up elephants.
Yeah, because I hate the animals. They must be on fire today.
Yeah, because they let me down on the Hakuna Matata level on the Lion King.
It all comes down to beating a big cat. Before you had to throw acorns at it, now you just set it on fire.
So this is really the new Cruelty to Animals podcast.
We're both on it. It's going to go that direction.
Yeah, okay. So, but I mean, I also, and I've been saying this a lot recently, but I think that if you have the time to be sort of upset about the game's length that you've talked about it for hours. You have to add those hours to the game's length.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, seriously.
Because now you have an 8.5 hour game because you're also calculating the 3 hours that you went on message boards and Facebook and stuff like that, and you said, I'm not happy about that.
Oh, they could make that like a box quote. Hours of metagame entertainment.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's a new feature.
I think it's important. It reminds me of back in the day, people used to complain about loading times. And they're like, no, loading times for 20 minutes. And I'm like, well, how long did you spend angry about this? Yeah. Was it an hour? Mm-hmm. Because then the loading times win. Yeah.
You obviously never owned a Neo Geo CD.
No.
So I think
how could you tell?
That stupid juggling monkey.
I think there's a third option here. I don't know how many options we had, but the fact that games are $60 point blank is kind of a stupid thing. Like, we're seeing the beginning of digital distribution done right.
Yeah.
We are seeing $15-$20 games. Mm-hmm. We're seeing free games with PlayStation Plus. That's awesome. But there still is that kind of that AAA standard of here's a $60 game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. There is it's the budget reflects the need to make it $60.
And they're probably selling them at a loss at this point.
I don't know if it's maybe $60 isn't the right way. Maybe if you sell it at $40, you'll sell enough more copies that that you'll make that money up.
There's also games are $60, but they don't have to be. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean they don't have to be for developers. I mean they don't have to be for you. Like, you don't have to buy a game at $60 point blank on day one from Best Buy with actual cash or something. You can get a deal on it. You can trade some stuff in. You can go to Amazon and wait till there's a price drop.
Yeah.
You can wait until it's on PlayStation Plus. Like, it's not the olden days where you would just walk into a store and be like, well, Clay Fighter 33 1/3 is still $95 because inflation.
I think you just convoluted Clay Fighter and the Naked Gun.
It was 63 1/3.
Yeah. Oh, I did.
Yeah, Clay Fighter 64.
See, that's the game I always wanted.
Is Leslie Nielsen fighting Clay Fighter game?
That'd be amazing.
His wife's a Clay Fighter game.
That would have been significantly better than Clay Fighter.
Yeah.
Earthworm Jim was in that game, wasn't he?
Maybe.
Jim's the worst.
Yeah, he was in the PC version.
Whatever you can do in your brain to remember that game better than it actually was.
Okay.
You do it. That you do that revisionist history. But yeah, I think no one's telling you to buy a game point blank for $60.
There's the buy it, skip it, rent it mentality.
And
I think that really there's also that you don't have to have it. Mm-hmm. You can wait.
Yeah.
It might be on sale in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, also, so many rad games came out the end of last year that you probably haven't played yet. Mm-hmm. Like, I have like 5 games just stacked up next to my TV that I'm like, man, I want to get to Dragon Age, but it is 10,000 hours long, and that horrifies me.
Yeah.
Honestly, the order appeals to me in that way.
Yep.
Even though, I played at preview events, and I've said on the podcast that I wasn't super thrilled with the gameplay, but I thought the game was gorgeous and the world was really cool. And hearing, if I'm not thrilled with the gameplay, but there's only 5, 6, 7 hours of it, and a lot of its cutscenes, then sure, I'll totally do this.
There was like a year and a half where for 10 or 15 minutes a day, I would pick up my phone and play Simpsons Tapped Out.
God, that was a dark time.
And by play, I mean just sort of begrudgingly poke at things on a screen. Just hearing sound effects. And I wasn't really actively engaged in it or anything. And every now and then you'd build a little house and put it in there. It's a little...
That sounds kind of the saddest life.
It is. It's a dopey little Farmville clone. But when you're sitting there waiting for a train, you have 5 minutes to kill. But that game was free. And I think I maybe put 25 or 30 real dollars into it over the course of a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And to me, that game, had you been like, that wouldn't, that if that was 10 cents every time you played it, that would add it up to probably a couple $100 or something like that. But we didn't have that business model, and I'm glad we didn't, because the sticker shock would have scared me off to begin with. Mm-hmm. But if you went and calculated how many hours people have spent in a game like Skyrim, and you're like, this is what you owe, because you think that short experiences should cost less. So by that logic, long experiences should cost more. Here's your bill. I mean, that's kind of unfair, right?
So you can't
have it both ways.
And by the way, this is a discussion that's been going on forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember reading message boards back in days of yore during PS1 era, people griping about Parasite Eve being too short, for example. We've been having this fight for 15, 20 years. It's still going on.
It's selling the medium short. It's poor choice of words, but it's embarrassing,
No one's walking into I was about to say a Woody Allen movie, but let's go to a different director. Yeah. A Scorsese movie and being like, oh, it's only an hour and 45 minutes long. Like, I feel like I had my, my time and money.
I just started watching Black Mirror.
Yeah.
And those are basically hour-long movies.
Yeah.
And it's awesome because they get everything done and there's no slump. And I can think of a ton of movies that would be so good if they were an hour long.
Like every Judd Apatow movie ever. We
don't have this genre in gaming. We don't have short games as a genre. Like books have
short stories
and films have short films.
Yeah. I mean, we have it as a genre, like in indie games, but we don't have AAA games can't be.
Right.
Like,
well,
we,
that's
we
the thing.
Refuse to have
we
that.
Call it an indie game like it's a handicap. And yeah. we go, like, shove yeah. it over there with the other, with the art school kids and the, yeah. you know, the band geeks and stuff like that. The weirdos on the side that make 2 hour long games. Like, Gone Home was something that I finished in, you know, 2 hours, two and yeah. a half hours. Yeah. Maybe even less than that.
It's like yeah. an EP, kind of.
But yeah, yeah. And I loved it. And I think it's very important to have those kind of things. You know?
You pay $20 for 2 hours of gameplay. And in 2013, that was the best $20 I spent on a game.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And I mean, whether or not you enjoyed it or enjoyed the gameplay of it, you have to enjoy, or you have to at least accept the fact that some people want to tell that story in that way. Mm-hmm. And we have to allow that. And I don't know if that means creating a genre. And I don't know what you do there. Like, I don't know if back in the day, the lottery and the Gift of the Magi were sold for less than, you know, any other book.
I
Gift of the Magi
is
the best.
Oh, Gift yeah. Yeah, Gift of the Magi is okay. The O. Henry.
It's absolutely. Okay. This yeah. guy was also on GameScoop. You made fun of Banjo-Kazooie, and he made fun of Game of Thrones. He said the last season of Game of Thrones was
What I said was last season of Game of Thrones, not a lot happened. That's what I said. The first episode and the last episode were great. Everything in between, pretty much nothing happened except a 5-minute fight scene.
Yep. There was a horse in it at some point.
Yeah, it's a Game of Thrones is a good show that had a bad season. Banjo-Kazooie just sucks. And
what about that part in the last season where the Hound got in that fight over chickens?
That was great.
That was, cool. That was the best food-related fight scene since the Fast and the Furious tuna fish sandwich scene.
There's a great, cosplay from,
no,
from Comic-Con.
No, you're not.
Yeah, there was a dude walking around Comic-Con dressed as the Hound, and he just had a bucket of KFC. I love that
good.
Photo.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
pretty fantastic.
But yeah, the order... I feel like that's we covered its length. So we're gonna cover the game.
If the order leaks, is it the pre-order?
Oh man!
No. drink your morphine.
Drink your morphine. Yeah, the full review by Brandon Tyrell is gonna go up Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. Game comes out Friday.
Of House Tyrell.
Or the Tyrell Corporation.
Jeez. And then Max and I are gonna be playing the order live from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific on Friday. IGN.
So we'll be playing it twice.
Live plays. Yes. We'll be.
Hey.
We just talked about how we were going to be above this.
Yuck, 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 zing.
Yeah, yuck, yuck, zing, indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so look out for that. That'll be cool.
Also, kids, read O. Henry. He's good.
O. Henry. You know what one
or
game...
Or eat O. Henry, because that's a good candy bar.
I've never had an O. Henry.
You're
what is that?
You're just
that's
trash
no way.
What's
no offense, but you've totally had an O. Henry.
What's an O. Henry? No, I don't know. What is it?
You've never had an O. Henry? There was an entire Seinfeld
It's from the people who brought you the whatchamacallit and the... Handshake Avenue or the fifth?
Who's
the
most?
The fifth.
That's where you go downtown with a $20 bill.
It's a candy bar named after a short story writer. What is this?
It's one of those like mid-tier candy. It's like Hershey was always trying to keep it down.
It's
like
a candy over or under zero bar.
Ooh.
So it's the kind of candy bar that I
zero bar.
You a big zero bar fan?
I'm a huge zero bar apologist. Champion, I'd like to say.
I just bought 5 0 bars. I had to drive to Walnut Creek to buy them.
I love you, Jack.
I bought 0.5 bars because they don't exist.
No, they were a gift from my wife's therapist, who's moving on to a new job. And
did she like zero bars?
He loves zero bars, and he can't get. And the only place in the area I've been able to find them is this candy store in Walnut Creek, like 40 minutes from my house. So
I only associate zero bars, no Henrys, and whatchamacallits with things I buy when I'm drunk. Because when I'm drunk and go into a convenience store, I'm like looking around and like. I'm not going to the go-to thing. It's like, man, I'm gonna branch out.
All right,
but you're drunk a lot. So
I'm on the O. Henry Wikipedia page, which was clearly written by somebody that was hit in the head with something heavy at some point. O. Henry is a candy bar containing peanuts, caramel, and fudge coated in chocolate. It was first introduced in 1920 by the Williamson Candy Company of Chicago, Illinois.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
It's from Chicago. It must be a good candy bar.
It's your classic mix of fudge, chocolate, caramel, and peanuts, which you really can't go wrong with. But something about them, they just never really reach the stratosphere of candy bar territory.
Chewy or crunchy taste? Like, do they lean toward like the Butterfinger like stale taste or
it's,
more
it
like
doesn't
the
really
chewy
have that sort
taste.
Of crumbly snap to it, if that's what you're looking for.
World's number one PlayStation podcast.
All right, what
Welcome
else we
to
got?
Candy Cast.
Wait, actually, hold on. Before we move on, Jared,
if you're gonna
give those candy bars, the zero bars, to your wife's doctor, I think you should put them on a check and just slide it across the desk and be like, "Bet you never seen that many zeros on a check before."
I'm gonna make a big Ed McMahon novelty check and do that now.
Welcome to the podcast beyond.
You realize he's a doctor, so he probably has seen many zeros.
No, this is a physical therapist. This is a therapist, so he's not quite as many zeros.
Mm-hmm.
Probably still raking in the duck at some.
You get some zeros,
but, yeah,
some zeros.
Yeah. He's really good too, Brian. We love you. You helped my wife walk again. Thank you.
Hi, Brian.
Oh, not me. I've never done that.
No. Well,
you've only hindered.
You're like, rise up, take up your mat, and she's just like, go away.
Wow,
that was.
I don't know what is happening.
I've tried. I'm going
to
keep
trying.
I
was trying to make. I was trying to make Bible humor. I failed. So.
Speaking of something that's also failed, The Last Guardian.
The Last Guardian.
So over the weekend, there was a hubbub because people figured out that Sony allegedly abandoned the trademark for The Last Guardian, which has actually happened a couple times in the last, like, 6 years. But then our buddies at GameSpot, I don't know why we didn't do this, but our buddies at GameSpot reached out to Sony, and Sony was like, no, this is just a clerical error, don't worry, it's still in development.
The light bulb on our trademark went out, and we had to change it.
It's fine.
This is just the theory of large numbers in action, I think. Just like, The Last Guardian has been unpublished for so long that this was bound to happen at some point. It's just, you know, it's monkeys on typewriters at this point.
And, like, when I saw the news initially that the trademark went up, I wasn't surprised. I actually thought that it was sort of on purpose, because it was the last in December, Fumito Ueda, you know, the creative director of Ico and Shadow, and now he's not at Sony anymore, but he's still working on this game.
He's like a contractor or something?
He's like a contractor, but he said the development's still going strong, but that it's under, quote, completely new conditions, which in my mind meant, obviously, it's not a PS3 game anymore, because that's...
Match 3 puzzle game for
straight
iOS.
It's a match, phone. It's a match 3 puzzle game. I also think...
Quiz and Dragons.
I think it's going to get... re-revealed as a game with a different name and an entirely different game.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, well, Last Guardian, it doesn't... I don't care what it's called, because I don't think it's going to be called that anymore.
The Final Protector.
The Final Protector.
I wonder if this is something that people are still really passionate about, or if there's that just sort of morbid curiosity to be like, what is this thing and why is it taking so long?
It starts,
like,
Duke Nukem now.
Yeah, it's reached that Duke Nukem Forever line where you have to pass through that line and you're all of a sudden at this new sea level of being like, I don't know if this is good anymore and I don't know if I care. I just want to see this, like, giant dog-driven train wreck crawl out of the shadows, and I can tell what this is. But it's weird to me that, like, you talk about the creative director of, like, two of the most amazing PlayStation games of all time, and he's been sort of stuck behind this project for so long, and then, like, it makes me wonder, like, if it wasn't for this game, maybe we would have gotten three other games in the meantime. Like, I don't know how that works, obviously.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's insane. We've brought it up on the show a few times. Since Shadow of the Colossus released, Naughty Dog has released Jack X, Uncharted 1, 2, and 3, The Last of Us, Last of Us Left Behind DLC, and most likely Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
It's insane.
The span that Team Ico has not released a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Wow.
It's
really sad.
It's worrisome.
I'm sad.
Yeah.
I don't
know. It makes me think that if, like, 10 years ago somebody was like, nah, man, I'll make a bet with you, I'm only going to play Team Ico games and you can play the Naughty Dog games. It's like, all right.
I would
have a good life.
I want it to come out so that we can have postmortems about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to know what happened in that development that went wrong. Because we've the most – I would pay so much money for a full-on, like, interactive documentary behind the scenes about Duke Nukem Forever.
Absolutely.
Even more for something that's a good game.
Yep.
But it's like, I think that question of what went wrong, what's slowing it down. And I mean, I think that the Bureau, for instance. That suffered a lot from being being announced wrong, being announced before it was done, being like, hey, kids, we're making weird, melty, bubbly cookie dough. And everyone's like, that looks gross. We don't want that. And they're like, yeah, but it's not done yet. It's going to be totally different. And then
it was the same genre.
Too many cooks spoil the broth. And it was just kind of a revolving door of different people coming in and working on that game. And the thing that they announced versus the thing they released was just this Frankenstein.
I mean, that's endemic in the industry of announcing something too early.
And I wonder if it's going to be – it's the same thing with Team Ico, or if it's –
I've probably given them a shout-out in the show before, but I want to do it again. I'm a big fan of a website called Unseen64.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
No, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Really?
You
all people would absolutely love them.
Oh, I'm excited.
They are a website that documents and chronicles the sort of alternate versions and canceled versions of games that never actually happened. So there was that version of Resident Evil 4 where Leon's, like, shooting ghosts and disappearing. He's in a haunted house. Like, there's levels from Mario 64 that never came out.
And they just gather all these in one place.
And they gather it all together. Like, stuff like
that. Why am I sitting here talking?
That Crash Bandicoot where he kills a cop.
Yeah. Cop Killer Bandicoot.
Sounds like Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yeah. It was Ice Cube was the voice of Crash. It was crazy.
Gosh. And Brandon was sitting watching Shadow the other day, like, on a live stream while he was working. Apparently, there's a mission in Shadow the Hedgehog where you, like, go kill the president. He said this was real.
Shocking that thing.
That's what they mean by shadow government.
So I want to know, like, in a few years, I'm totally with you, Max. Like, I'm a big fan of I think EGM used to do them too. It was sort of like they would talk to developers after a game is out, and I feel like that is the most important time to talk to somebody.
Yeah, that's what makes amazing stories.
You know, we're heading into the next season of Up at Noon. Max and I are taking that show over. But before the old season that I did with Greg, we used to just have developers on every week. And one of my most fascinating things that I learned is that talking to somebody before a game comes out and talking to somebody after a game comes out, you are talking to two completely different people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're talking to a person who's A, like, oh, we were able to do real-time weapon blah, 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 and our game supports 64 players. And a month later, they're just like, we tried so bad to make a boss out of a lamp, but he didn't work. But I wanted it so badly, but we couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, why wasn't it there? And it's like, oh, we know, we just didn't have time. And you don't hear that because no one ever tells you the shortcomings of a game before it comes out.
Right.
So I'm fascinated in hearing years later sort of just like, this was the most ambitious game ever made, and it turned into a pop-up book.
Yeah.
And now it is where it is, and I'm sorry, but it's canceled, or it's out, or the version you played was a 6 out of 10, but this was almost this like GTA with a giant Wolverine or whatever animal that is.
I want to play that so bad.
Right? Man, like, who knows?
Community, jump to it.
Who knows? So I think that's fascinating. So yeah, check out Unseen 64. They have this sort of amazing timeline of alternate dimensional games we never got to play, canceled games and things that didn't really ever exist.
You've ruined my day. I can't wait.
There was going to be an Akira game.
Really?
That was going to be like Road Rash.
Oh, God.
And the only things that exist about it are a few screenshots that were trickled out. I think this was pre-E3, so there wasn't like... there wasn't that kind of trade show culture, and there are no existing builds of it anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things that it just – maybe it's somewhere in a dumpster. Maybe it just doesn't exist, but there's like five screenshots, and they look awesome. It was for Sega and Super Nintendo. And,
oh, man.
Now, I love what, like, Frank Cifaldi does with Lost Levels, grabbing all that stuff, chronicling. But these alternate build things, I cannot wait.
That's really cool.
Did we ever really get this sort of, like, post-mortem on Duke Nukem Forever? I know we got, like, notes here and there and lawsuits and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of it is behind lawsuits.
One of the coolest things that I have, I've got a friend who works at 2K. Mm-hmm. And I'm apparently the only person who wants Duke Nukem-flavored garbage in his house. So I have like a whole set of Duke Nukem shot glasses, and I've got like the collector's edition of the strategy guide, which is just this big, hideous gold hardcover thing with the Atomic logo on the cover. And the best part of that is the last maybe 50 pages are all concept art. And it changes so much.
Yeah.
Like, that game was really, really, really offensive. Like, like more than it ended up being. There was a female character who was an Asian lady whose name was Miso, like the soup, Miso Honey. Miso Horny, but yeah.
I'm really glad that didn't happen.
Yeah. But then there were also, there was a lot of also really cool designs that just got scrapped or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the thing that sucks about it is that when that came out, they were trying so hard to sell the game and like hype it up. And they're like, we're really excited. This game is finally coming to fruition. And I just want to go through that with, like, I don't know, George Broussard or somebody and be like, what happened there? What changed? Because this, you know, I mean, the early stuff was like hideous, like late mid-90s Wildstorm comics, like Area 51 Aliens and just stuff you'd see in a skateboard catalog.
Wow.
And then it changed just so much.
Yeah, I've heard stories about a pitched Duke Nukem. I can't tell the story. I'll ask the guy if I have permission to tell the story. But a pitched Duke Nukem game recently sounded incredible and would absolutely like revitalize that series and be insanely topical.
Is it a Super Mario RPG style game?
Duke Nukem Legend of the Seven Stars.
I'm totally okay with that.
As long as there's a guy named Gino in it, I'm cool.
Yeah, Gino. Oh my gosh, Gino
should be in every game. Yeah, just an Italian guy.
I was about to say, shocking that Brian Altano wants a little Italian puppet in all of his video games. Speaking of Italy, Assassin's Creed takes place in Italy.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
You know what?
I like how you did that.
That was a big leap of faith.
After 33 minutes, I had to get on to the third story. So.
It's all right. This is the marathon of content that Beyond fans demand.
It's just never going to end. We're all actually going to get fired because we're going to miss everything else today.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm actually launching a new show called Speaking of Italy.
Speaking of Italy? Speaking of Italy with Brian Altano.
What a disaster.
Stupid Valentine's Day.
There's news on the Assassin's Creed movie front. We all know that Michael Fassbender is starring, which is super exciting because he's the best.
Because he's a real actor.
He was in Shame and 12 Years a Slave, and he was incredible in those. He was always naked in all of Shame. Remember Shane?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was really
wiener,
naked in that movie.
His wiener was just everywhere. Can I say wiener?
I think you can probably say that word.
Only if I can say Michael Fassboner.
Yeah, right. Sure. Just get it all out of your system, guys.
Oh, the morphine's finally kicking.
Will he be naked in Assassin's Creed?
I don't know, but his co-star is going to be Marion Cotillard, who was Oscar-winning actress for La Vie en Rose. She's in Inception.
Right.
She's super incredible. And so the two of those paired with it's the director of a Macbeth movie that's about to come out with the two of those. This is the guy who's directing Assassin's Creed. I'm like, oh, man, it's like when Kenneth Branagh took over Thor.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, you've directed, like, Shakespearean dramas, and now you're taking over Thor. Which and that first Thor movie wasn't great, but the sort of pedigree behind it was all right. Yeah.
It had that, that Kenneth Branagh had that. He's just, he brought that
gravitas.
That pomp.
That gravitas.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so this, like, production's beginning on this movie in a few months, and that's going to be released December 21st, 2016.
Wow.
Yeah. But so, I don't know. Like, this is, we're still, like, everyone's looking for that white whale of, which I'm so sick of talking about, but when are we going to get the first?
You know what? I think that this could be good. Yeah. I think this could actually be good. I honestly don't hate Assassin's Creed. I am so frustrated with its completely ham-fisted storytelling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a really, really cool story in there that they managed really to just kind of shuffle around and smear around.
I mean,
you have this world that's already built, and if you get a good writer to go in and like kind of cherry pick the stuff that's compelling, the Assassin's Creed comics, the ones that are in like the Russian Revolution, are
really
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really good. And
so have they talked at all about like how are they going to just jump into Italy and be like, this is where the story takes place? Or are they going to pull out to the company in the present time the Garden of Eden the other like,
we don't know if any of that meta story is going to be in there. We don't know if this is going to, you know, if Michael Fassbender is going to play Altair and it's going to take place during the Crusades, or if he's going to be Ezio and it's going to be during the Renaissance.
I mean, if they make a cross between the Matrix and Timeline, they're kind of there.
Yeah,
well, that could come out, but this could also end up being Bram Stoker's Dracula. I mean, sometimes you get a great director and great actors together and you end
everything
up with a grease fire. You know, so not that I speculate that that's what's going to happen, but
this isn't Winona Ryder, we must defeat the creature of the night.
That was lovely.
Oh no, he bit me in the neck.
Dude, it's a vampire.
I have to go to Transylvania in this carriage.
And then for
a wolf doth appear.
That doth sucks, dude.
But you also had Anthony Hopkins and Gary Oldman. And the movie's still just a kind of a weird wreck. I actually love it, but it's so you know, it doesn't always guarantee success to have great people attached. But it's a better shot than we've had in a long time at that.
Bram Stoker's Dracula was one of those many movies that I saw a Simpsons reference before I actually saw the movie. Mm-hmm. So like, I remember in a Treehouse of Horrors, like one of them, like Mr. Burns was pretty much, he had that like, weird butt hair.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was referencing. And then like 2 years later,
Dracula
I saw
Dead and Loving
yeah,
It.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw that movie so many times that I didn't realize that we are really off track right now. No, I think that I'm actually really excited about this idea because I think that like they've got such a massive just kind of Bible to work from with Assassin's Creed stuff. The thing that they need to do, that they have to do, is make this a point of entry to the series for someone who's never played the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They've got the most, like, just, I mean, it is, I would say, one of the most original premises for a game. I mean, it's still derivative in the way the games
this
are.
This comes out in December of next year?
Yeah.
That seems odd that they wouldn't, I mean, it's not like they have any shortage of games in the Assassin's Creed universe coming out, but it seems odd that they're not tying this to any game. Because I have a feeling...
I mean, we don't know. Maybe it will
they probably
be
are.
The story of whatever next year's Assassin's Creed is. I don't know.
Because to me, it seems like Max said, like, if this is somebody's first Assassin's Creed experience, and they're going to be like, I love the part where you climbed the building and then jumped in a hay, which I still don't understand how that's going to work in a movie. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. And the eagle's like, Skrrr! And he jumps
maybe they'll find a way to make fun of it. I mean,
the worst thing is going to be like the new story of Michael Fassbender breaks neck and it's stuck on horribly awry.
Yeah. I hope if
awry? Was that a hay joke? A grain harvesting joke?
Damn it,
I don't
Max.
Think so. That
just
was
like a pile
what
of
kind
rye?
Of deep cut is that?
The universe is number one PlayStation podcast.
No, I do hope they have a scene where Michael Fassbender is running down the street and he accidentally like jumps onto the side of a wall instead of hitting somebody.
Yeah,
because like, that's what I do in that game 90% of the time.
Yeah.
No, I just really think it'll be a missed opportunity if people go see that movie and they come home and there is not immediately a brand new Assassin's Creed game to play. But there will be no shortage of old
they've
ones
been,
for them to
talk, I feel like so. They've been missing the chance to basically have a fresh start with that franchise for the last, I don't know, 3-4 games. You know? I was hoping – they did that thing that – publishers always do where they're like, yeah, Unity is going to be our chance for people to really just get a fresh start and learn about this universe. And it's like, you didn't try. You didn't just...
I think what happens is you have so many different studios and teams all over the world working on that. And there isn't like one specific, like, let's have a conference where we get everyone in the room and we just go, stop. Don't do that part anymore. Yeah. Because by the time they do that, there's already one team is already 3 years deep on making that mistake again.
Yeah. I mean, Ubisoft always touts, which is incredibly impressive, that their games are in development 24/7 because of just the way their studios work. But I'm like, well, that's impressive on paper, but I don't know if that's good in execution on making an actual, like, sort of tangible, like cohesive.
That's like building a house on the back of building a house on the back of a moving truck.
I always felt like, you know, I love the world building they do in those games. I love the character design. I love the art direction. When it comes to actually putting in 25 hours into one, like, that's when it kind of loses me.
But it's
luckily movies aren't that long.
There's a lot of things to love about the games, but you know, there's also a lot of running around and gathering things.
And obviously, this isn't Ubisoft's first foray into movies. They did Prince of Persia with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I want Far Cry.
The fine motion picture
there's
there.
There's an Uwe Boll Far Cry movie already.
Yep.
Oh, based on Far Cry 1. And then also... there are Splinter Cell movies in the works, directed by Doug Liman and starring Tom Hardy, who's another good actor. I like that Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
I like that guy. I am Gotham's Reckoning.
That was pretty good. We have News of the Week, which happens literally every week. Another next-gen port of a last-gen game. This time it's Darksiders 2.
More games, okay.
I don't know if you guys remember Darksiders. It's probably the second best Zelda game you can play on a Sony system. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okami.
So that's getting ported to next
What about 3D Game Heroes?
Yeah. Ooh, that's pretty good. We got a letter from Luis. This is when it was rumored. He said, Luis said, I was on VG charts recently, saw a bit of news on Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition for PS4. The listing said it was $40, but no one had confirmed it. Do you think it'll come out? Do you think it'll be $40? When do you think it'll officially be announced? Luis? It is officially announced.
Mm-hmm.
IGN did it.
Is it officially $40?
It's officially $40.
Yeah. Wow, that's a good deal.
Nordic Games told us that the authenticity of the Amazon listing is unquestionable. It's a weird way to announce a game.
That's a very weird way. Yeah. Very lore
the lie
heavy
is
there.
Not a lie, but it is true.
Yeah, right. Oh my God.
I will purchase and play this game.
Yeah, so wait, did you guys play Darksiders 2?
I did. I really, really, really wanted to love it because obviously the ties to Zelda, which is one of my favorite franchises of all time. But I couldn't really get past the idea of death being a guy that gets beat around a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, death getting beat up?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Like that was, I mean, and it was sort of, I think a lot of the art direction was just sort of...
Well, until he hit his growth spurt, he was a little guy. So, yeah. I mean, you know, he just got picked on a lot. They wanted his lunch money.
That was another game. Mm-hmm. That was
I guess it was kind of like the Anakin Skywalker thing, which is like, hey, here he is as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
I'm a pod racer.
I thought it was pretty... Like, the art was the thing that turned me off.
Yeah. It's everything I hated about comics in the 90s that I wish we could leave
behind.
And a lot of people don't, like, they don't have a problem with that, and that's awesome.
You have trouble with Grifter?
Yeah,
cool. I thought it played great though. Like actually fighting in that game, the combat was really fun.
Oh yeah,
like, going
and
through
the, like it nails dungeons really well.
Yeah, they're really good.
That game was super long too. That game should have been shorter.
Yep.
I also like the fact that you can summon your horse wherever you want, except for like inside dungeons, and Death just goes, "This is no place for a horse." And I'm like, you are literally in the afterlife. Like, this is a great place for a horse right now.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. It's one of those games where I know that there's a really strong like foundation there, but everything on top of it, I just is completely abhorrent to me, and I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, and originally, I mean, they said that they had before THQ went under, they said that there was a plan for Darksiders 3 that was like a 4-player cooperative, almost like Borderlands.
See, that actually sounded kind of more interesting almost because that they were like, we're gonna make a game for each of the four horsemen, like that was kind of their plan.
Marvel Cinematic Universe,
they got a little bit ahead of themselves there. Also, I love that game. Is like the guy who's leaving the party and says the huge big goodbye. He's like, guys, I'm heading home. I have to go. And everyone's like, goodbye. Have a good drive safe. He's like, I got to take off. And we're like, all right, see you. And he leaves and he comes back. He's like, sorry, I forgot my keys. And everyone's like, all right, we'll see you. Goodbye. And he comes back and says, oh, yeah, I got my sunglasses. I'm going to take off. And we're like, all right. And he's like, is it cool if I crash? We're like, all right, HD version, whatever, fine.
God damn it. That's how games get made.
Yeah.
How do you guys, so pretty much every week I've ever been on the show, Colin's gone on a rant saying how much he hates these HD re-releases. I guess it's not HD anymore because they were HD before. But I mean, what do you guys feel about them? Like, are you fine when you hear that Metro is coming? And
totally fine.
Yeah.
There's two sides of it. There's the version of me that's just like, I only want new games. And then there's the version that understands that 70 something percent of people hadn't played The Last of Us mm-hmm. when it came to PS4, and yeah. that this is a lot of people's first console. Like, the PS4 is a lot of people's first video game console mm-hmm. in the way mine was the NES, and I can't be mad at that. And I think I'd rather give people the option to play something they never had a chance to play mm-hmm. Than suffocate that for my own selfishness because I want new experiences all the time.
I tend to err with you on the side of Super Mario All-Stars.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I just sit there and mm-hmm. go, oh, look, a really cool new way to do something I
yeah.
love.
Yeah.
And maybe that's weak of me critically to go in and say, why aren't you making a new wonderful thing with yeah. that with those resources? Mm-hmm. And so there is that strong argument to be made. But when you have an established great game that a lot of people got their hands on, you know,
yeah.
keep making it. I love when old games become accessible again. Grim Fandango and Resident Evil yeah. made my month.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly.
Well, I think especially in the case of something that was an old THQ property, which is like anytime any of their old horses get to trot out again, yeah. it's amazing to me because they all were put out to pasture a few years ago.
This is no
or
place
sent
for
to the glue
horse.
Factory. the horses.
We do not
Big
know a
fan.
Lot about, we do not know a lot about horses.
Love That's horses. Probably one
I'm
of the best
of
vehicles in the world.
Afraid of horses. They scare
really?
Me.
Afraid of
yeah,
horses?
I'm terrified of horses. They scare me.
It's because of the ring?
No, it's not because of the ring. It's they're large.
Because they weren't supposed to be scary in that. That was supposed to be about a little girl who's scary.
Actually, a couple of them committed suicide in that movie. Not while making
the horses
it. Maybe they did.
Committed
suicide? Of luck.
No, during the ring, there's a scene where the boat pulls up to like Terror Island with the hole in it, and the horses are on the boat and they jump off because they hate it.
I don't remember
there.
That.
Was that a real accident that happened, or was that part of the film?
Look, man, if that's happening, you got to turn the camera on.
I get that
it,
movie and the horse whisperer mixed up.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a different movie.
That's
yeah,
not
very
a bad
different
movie.
So, HD versions of games.
Yeah, big fan.
I'm all for them.
Yeah,
I think it's
not?
Also a lot of times, especially at this point in like a you know console life cycle, it gives a game a chance to kind of take another shot, you know?
Yeah.
Sleeping Dogs. I love that game. I thought it was fantastic, and I feel like everyone kind of slept through it.
Sure.
I think so.
That was accidental. I'm really sorry.
I think that if you took your top tier team, right, and you said we're going to
TTT,
the TTT, the triple T's, the titties.
That was fine. I don't got to mark that one.
And you, it's not a curse, right? It's a type of bird. And you said we're going to take you guys, and for 3 years we're going to put you on an HD remake. Then yeah, that is a terrible use of resources. Terrible. But if you take you know the Bad News Bears or whoever is sitting around, like your second or third tier team, and you say, you know, you're going to work on a Darksiders port for 6 months, then that's fine. Okay. Yeah, sure. Take a great game and make it better. Great.
I think what happened was a lot of people – I mean, Mario All-Stars, no one's going to complain because it was four rad games.
We also didn't have the internet to complain at that point.
Yeah. You just had to like open your window and
that
complain.
Was like
it was just a tree in everyone's backyard that we beat up with rocks and sticks. We yelled at it.
But then even like last gen, we had like the Metal Gear collection, we had three Metal Gear games. Mm-hmm. We had Eco and Shadow. We had two games. The Jack collection.
That's awesome.
Ratchet,
yeah.
I love that. I love when it's multiple games. And so I think like I sort of understand when it's like, well, why isn't Darksiders 1 also included in this? Why is it just – I mean, I guess we don't know.
That was really cool for Bayonetta 2 to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Just pack it in there. Yeah,
pack it and throw it in.
Yeah. That was good. I don't have a segue for this one, but we're moving on to a game called Helldivers.
Speaking of Italy,
Helldivers. Have any of you guys played Helldivers at E3/PAXs/?
I've never touched PSXs. It. My impression is it's like top-down cooperative shooty Lost Vikings or something. Like you.
It's less Lost Vikings. It's like a top-down Left 4 Dead.
Ooh, okay.
So it's like a twin-stick shooter. Okay. It's four people. It's a sci-fi game. You build your loadout and go in there. But the game is just insanely hard and requires like massive amounts of team cooperation. And the game's a lot of fun. We've been hyping up. Vince and Colin both have loved the game for months. Turns out it is coming out on March 3rd.
Huh. Hey.
PS4, PS3, and the PS Vita. Look at that. Wow. You brought up the Vita.
Nice.
In a non-violent sense.
Yeah.
Marty,
nice.
Is this a game where people are going to yell at me because I'm the one bad guy on the team and I'm making us like all fail?
Oh, yeah. No. This is is definitely that game.
Is that what you do? You play like that?
What? Yeah. Not on purpose.
No, oh, right.
I just suck at video games.
I guarantee you I'd be worse than you.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
are
yeah.
you bad at video
we
games?
We should have a badness contest. All right,
let's have a badness contest.
Max is always like, hey, guys, I found a river. And we're like, keep moving. There's a boss attacking.
That was absolutely what was happening during Evolve. The four of us were playing on a team, and we're like, Max, we need you. Max. He's like, I found a rock. Yeah. Like, this entire map is a canyon.
That kangaroo was looking at me funny. I'm setting it on fire with electricity.
The reason I always play the one in 4v1 games is because I suck at video games, so I'm just like, well, I don't have to coordinate with anybody, and they'll win, and they'll all feel good.
I'm not bad. It's just asymmetrical.
You know. I'm not bad. I'm asymmetrical. Mike, at Groovy Mike. I don't know how he got at Groovy Mike. He must have been an early adopter.
A lot of people were fighting for that one.
He was an early adopter to Twitter. He wrote in saying that he's been checking out the awesome trailers and gameplay videos for Helldivers. The release date's penciled for the first week of March. Do you think this could be included in March's PS Plus collection?
I would say April.
You think so?
I think they frequently do that. I mean, they've done a few where it's been like out the gate. Like
this month. With
Outlast was one of them,
Outlast
right?
was one of them. Apotheon this month was one of them. It seems like, I don't know. Jose and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago, how Transistor was free this month.
Yeah.
And that's a game that came out in last May, I think. And it's amazing. And it's one of those games everyone should play. And he was sort of like, man, like 2 months ago, I bought the game for $20. And now it's free. And I feel slighted, even though I don't know if I should be. And that's always an interesting thing. Like, is that fair? Do you guys
feel that way? Well, there's that early adopter sort of depression that happens with a lot of situations.
Oh, yeah.
You buy a console. Like if you bought a PS3 at launch, it was what, $7,000.
It was $7,000.
And they were bragging about how it didn't even need games, and they'd sell millions of them. And people went out and bought them, and they were just like, "This is the new PS3." And then a couple months later, they were price dropped, right? Or a year later, whatever it was. Yeah. Same thing happened with my 3DS, and I had to get that like apology certificate from Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
They were like,
although at least they did send you a bunch of free games.
Yeah, they gave me some NES games and GBA games and stuff like that.
Which you were an ambassador.
I wasn't.
You were an ambassador.
You're allowed an ambassador.
I don't think they know what that word means.
No, I don't think so either. But I think with PlayStation Plus, it's even more complicated because you don't really know when you're buying something how quickly it can become free. And sometimes it's free a month later. Sometimes it's free immediately. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's free never. And you never really know. It always gives you that sort of hesitation about buying things. Like it's a gift and the curse in that I love that every single month we write a story on IGN and it says like, these are all the presents you're getting this month. And I'm like, awesome. And I go and I download all of them, even if I have no intention of playing them, just because I know that just syncing that purchase means that at some point a year from now, I could get on a flight and be like, I'm playing Helldivers for free.
Yeah.
Right. But I never know what to do because I'm like, I want to buy this game right now. Like I just bought Resident Evil last month. It was $20. That is totally going to be a PlayStation Plus game within the next 6 months.
Yeah.
This year, 100%. Because that's totally the type of game they're just like, here you go. It's $20. It's no sweat off of our backs or whatever. I don't know how that works.
They have sweaty backs.
They're sweaty backs.
But and these games are free-ish. Let's not forget that too. You are paying money to Sony, every month for this privilege. I mean, you are paying for these games. You're just paying for them in a really weird way.
The $50 a year is like, I don't want to be, the guy who's like, well, it's not really paying for it. But like $50 a year is pretty.
It's a wonderful deal. It's a superb deal.
I think you just gotta look at it and be like, buy the games that you really want, and if you're on the fence about them, wait it out. I think it was, Nidhogg.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really wanted that because I was drunk and I bought it, and then it was like free like 2 weeks later, and I was like, you know what? That's okay because I really enjoyed it. Like I had a really good time with it.
And I mean, again, we don't know how like PlayStation Plus deals work out in terms of how much the developers get from Sony, but it's nice for like indie games like that or like Transistor that paying that money and knowing that it's going to a good place. It's not going to some like evil corporation.
That's
it's going to a small group of men and women who work their asses off on building something cool and new.
And animals.
I mean, there's a lot of games have development dogs at the end.
That's right. Donnie the development dog. He sits in the corner of every studio barking yes for no. I'm a big fan of PlayStation Plus because I think that it does give a lot of people the opportunity to play a game like Transistor or Nidhogg that I don't think they ever would have. A lot of people would have looked at that game and been like, this is an indie game. It should be free. And it's like, well,
they didn't finish the graphics.
Yeah.
Where's all the graphics, guys?
Where's the polygons? They get mad.
I love the Nidhogg.
A game that is not going to be coming to PlayStation Plus anytime soon was announced over the weekend. It's called Dissidia Final Fantasy. I don't think anyone at this table besides me cares about Final Fantasy. Jared,
I do.
Might care.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely.
The Dissidia series was a PSP series, and it's a fighting game series where you play as your favorite Final Fantasy warrior and you fight.
With other Final Fantasy games. That sounds awesome.
Can you punch a chocobo?
You can totally not punch a chocobo.
Actually, no, you can't punch a chocobo. No, I don't think it is also a delicious energy drink in Japan.
Dissidia. Based on the game?
Based on the game.
I thought chocobo punch.
No, chocobo punch. I would drink chocobo punch. It's just chocobo blood mixed up with some spices. Little 5-hour energy. Well, that's what he was drinking earlier, was chocobo punch.
Yeah, he actually. I like how you pointed it to his veins.
Well, he has a Mountain Dew tattoo.
One of my veins fell off of my arm, and it's on the floor now.
Well, like a snake.
But the reason we're not going to be playing this on PlayStation Plus is because it was announced for arcades.
Yeah.
It's an arcade game. It's a 3v3 fighting game.
Stop it, Japan.
Why'd Japan keep doing this? That sounds like a fun time.
They still have arcades.
It's the same thing Nintendo did with Pokken.
Yeah.
Then again, there's also the fact that what if this is their chance to balance a game that they want to put out on consoles.
Yeah.
Because at this point, they are having people pay to test a game, essentially. I'm not saying it's unfinished, but arcade games are frequently like, you know, they kind of roll those out first, and then they're like, I mean, that's how...
And arcades are still a barely viable business in Japan. You can go to Japan, you still find arcades in cities. Yeah. You can go to game centers, and some of them are owned by, like Namco owns their own arcades. Taito owns their arcades. Yeah. Sega, same way.
And Shibuya, there's a huge Sega arcade that's basically just... It's 90% crane machines.
Well, that's what people pump their money into over there. This is a culture where pachinko, a form of gambling's a well-established and addictive part of what people do for fun.
A popular sport for children.
I don't think UFO catchers are kind of the training ground for pachinko.
I don't think I told this story on the show, but Mitch Dyer and I in Shibuya went into a pachinko building, if you can even call it that. And it's basically 5 floors of screaming loud terror and hundreds of people chain smoking.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most offensive attacks on my senses that I've ever experienced as a human adult.
It's like walking into a...
The floor is sticky. Oh my God. The air is a miasma. There are bright lights. Yeah. And it sounds like you're in the factory or the main crossfire.
I kid you. It sounds like you're inside a transformer as it's transforming.
You're in a William Gibson novel.
I kid you not. I walked in healthy and I walked out sick.
Yeah.
I actually got sick walking in. Like, I walked in, I was just like, I know. I'm not the same person that I was anymore. It felt like Jeff Goldblum warping across the room in The Fly.
So if you're in Japan and you walk by a pachinko and it's painted green on the outside, that's an echo pachinko where they won't let you smoke inside because Japanese people started complaining about the same things. So those are much less filthy generally. Don't have the layers of grime. Did you see the Ghostbusters pachinko while you're there?
No, I saw the Batman one, which was terrifying.
Yeah, that thing's frightening.
My friend has an Evangelion pachinko machine in his bedroom in Connecticut, and it's the coolest, most why is this here machine I've ever seen. And it sounds like the Rapture. It screams through this one tiny tinny speaker, the Cruel Angels thesis, and it's just like then a bunch of balls fall out, and he'll forget to put the tray in, so the balls just go rattling across his floor.
So he makes a Home Alone trap.
And his mom will come in and be like, "Christopher, what are you doing? It's Kaku, ding 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 ding."
I know that every Evangelion or whatever,
Lily.
Every Evangelion pachinko machine legally ships with a mother that walks in that goes, "What are you doing, Christopher?"
Video games are arcade machines in general, entertainment machines, UFO catchers, Porokoro, which are the big photo machines. Those still have some market there. And so something like Dissidia does make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, drunken salaryman at 3 a.m. can walk down the streets of Tokyo and pump 20 bucks worth of...
Brian and I got drunk and went to Toys R Us last weekend, so...
Yeah, so I can't throw stones.
We really can't make fun of this. I mean, I love that in Japan you've got this... It's like you've got... You know, you got a 500 yen coin or whatever. You have five bucks in your pocket.
Yeah.
You can go and you can buy a cool action figure. You just put a thing in and a little bubble comes out and you're like, Gashapon, there you go. That's my thing. Or you can go and have noises and lights at you and you lose the money and nothing happens. You get some balls in a cup and then you have to go home.
And you get cancer.
Or you can have a thing in the middle where you sort of try to make a thing happen with the UFOs and maybe you get a toy, maybe you lose your money.
Now, at the risk of creating a terrible soundbite, you can trade those balls for cash. You go around the side of the building and there's a little Yakuza stand hidden around the back and you trade
balls. You've been reading my Craigslist posts?
Exactly. But
there's a Yakuza stand?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the with, you know, at the threat of my life, a lot of these places are closely tied. So the Japanese mob is not nearly as separated from day-to-day society as it is
here. They're closer to a volunteer fire department than a real criminal organization.
In a way. But yeah, a lot of the gambling is Yakuza-controlled, yep. Yakuza influence. And so you have these places where you can trade the balls in for prizes, or if you know where the little window is, you go outside the pachinko parlor, around the corner, and there's a little window, and there's a guy sitting there, and he'll trade the balls for cash. And he works for the mob, and they take a cut, and, you know, that's that.
I've got balls of steel.
So.
Moving on. What else we got?
Staying with Square Enix for a second. They announced that they're asking developers to pitch ideas for games based on Gex, Fear Effect, and Anachronox. So this is part of they had the program where they're like, hey, now that we have Eidos, we have all these properties that we don't care about.
Yeah.
But if you guys want to make games about them, you can.
That's the best thing they can possibly do.
I think it's fascinating. A lot of people don't really know that part of game development is that there are studios that are...
They just own things?
There are studios that finish a project and they're waiting for their next one to come along and they just go... Do you guys want to make a mock Gears of War game and see if Epic wants to buy it? And they just put together this pitch, and then it never sees the light of day, and then it ends up on a site like Unseen 64. Yep. Shout out to those guys again.
On their payroll? What is that?
Yeah, I am.
he just loves good things, and he wants to spread the word.
So I think this is really cool, and it's also like the Gex thing is amazing to me because that is so 90s.
Yep.
It is such a 90s character. Like everything about that guy is garish and neon and beautiful.
David Gould.
Yeah, and it's just like it's a Paula Poundstone jacket. Like it's just amazing.
So I printed off the Wikipedia page because I didn't realize Gex had a story. Brian, if you want to read just a couple paragraphs of the Gex story,
do that.
Start at story, go to the next page. This story gets weird.
Gex and his family live in Maui, Hawaii. His mother raised him and his three younger siblings while their father worked for NASA. What?
Yep.
Gex's hobbies include spending time with his friends, surfing, playing the ukulele, and throwing poi parties. It feels like they tried to write pot, and then they just skipped the letter, and it's the same thing. One day, Gex's mother... This keeps going. One day, Gex's mother gets a phone call from NASA. What? Explaining that Gex's father and 10 human volunteers died when their rocket exploded on the launch pad. According to the manual, the explosion was caused by a Band-Aid floating in one of the fuel tanks. Soon, the Gecko family's carefree life is shattered when Gex bottles up his emotions and takes refuge in front of the television to get over the tragedy, only to become obsessed. 3 weeks later, he becomes an addict to TV. Wow, so Gex is really based on the death of a paternal figure and the serious depression that follows from television addiction. 3 weeks later, he becomes an addict to TV after several unsuccessful attempts to get Gex to stop watching TV and consulting with a minister and friends at work. Wow, he turned to religion for a moment. Gex's mother decides it is time for a change. The Gecko family moves to Encino, California, home of Pauly Shore. Gex's TV is taken away and he flees from home. After several months of living on the streets, Gex inherits an enormous amount of money and he moves back to Maui to live in a mansion and buys the world's largest TV. This is still going. Yep. Are you kidding me? While watching TV one day, Gex swallows a passing fly, not knowing it is sort of a miniature transmitter. You don't need any of the story before this to get to where we are right now. Moments later, a huge hand shoots out of the screen and grabs Gex by his neck, pulling the young Gecko into his own TV. The cold claw belongs to Rez, the overlord of the media dimension, who intended to make Gex his new mascot and conquer the world. This is still going. Gex traverses through the worlds of the media dimension based on different genres, The Cemetery, New Toonland, and many, many more, which I'm not reading. This is amazing.
Yep.
Okay, so I really think we ought to ask listeners, viewers, to just submit their best Gex pitches for the sequel.
See, I would love to see a Gex that is given the same level of, like, character rebuilding that the new Tomb Raider was given. I want all of that. Yeah. I want it to be the most bleak game about a lizard wearing sunglasses you've ever seen.
Kenneth Branagh's Gex.
Yeah. I want Darren Aronofsky's Gex.
Oh, there we go.
I want the wrestler, but with Gex.
The Gexler.
That's really all. Whenever there's a dumb 90s video game character, I'm like, I want a game that's like that crossed with the wrestler.
I want the character to get a job at the meat counter and he cuts his finger and he's bleeding all over the place.
I really do want a Duke Nukem game where he's like meeting his daughter and he's like, hey, baby. And she's like, why don't you ever call mom? And he's like, I've got balls. She's like, no, stop.
Man, you really like Duke Nukem. I didn't realize that.
Why would Why would 10 humans work with a lizard at NASA? I'm stuck on this. I'm sorry.
Experimentation, maybe.
I'm sorry. So this is what they're throwing out there. They're like, anybody can make this game.
Yeah.
Like, can they throw this story away?
No, they shouldn't.
Why, did you guys, on a kind of parallel note, did you guys play Bubsy 3D? Yeah.
Oh, the newest one? Yeah, yeah.
The one, Arcane Kids?
Yeah, yeah.
Where Bubsy goes to the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, the LACMA.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weirdest thing. You guys at home, you should all go find this. You can play it for free online. It's a weird Unity game. It's about Bubsy dying and going to hell after visiting an art exhibit.
That sounds amazing.
It's the best thing. It's just the best thing.
No, I've never played this.
I want this to happen to Gex. Like, I want a thing where they're like, why can't we explore this lizard character? Why? Mm-hmm. Clearly, there's a lot of stuff to explore. There's a lot of deep themes.
I like your kind of wrestler angle where everyone's telling him to let it go, but it's just specifically about the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's actually, which is interesting because we live in a 90s obsessed generation right now.
Sure.
Where people are just like, oh, okay, you can't remember about the 90s, the snap
pogo,
race.
Pogo
it's
balls.
Like, shut up. Stop pogo remembering balls. The 90s and start living now.
Yeah.
But I like this idea of this character just being stuck back there and he doesn't understand why because he started watching TV out of addiction and depression because his dad died at NASA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What the hell?
Dude, games are weird, right?
Yeah.
Band-Aids are very dangerous in rocketry.
Also, what a totally just bizarre piece of minutia.
I know.
Like, here's the debris, the specific debris that caused the death of this cartoon gecko's father.
Dude, this is still the least weird thing about the 3DO. That story right there. True. I mean, that's honestly, as weird as all that is, all of that is far less weird than the existence of the 3DO in the first place, which led to the existence of Gex. So I mean,
all right. So let's bring that little lizard back.
He's coming back soon. Game of the year, 2016. Okay, we have one more news story, Jared. I'm gonna turn it to you because you're probably really excited about this.
Yeah, I am actually. So we've got this Housemarque and Eugene Jarvis making a game. So Eugene Jarvis, not the supercomputer that Tony Stark uses to build evil robots, but Eugene Jarvis, in fact. Influential game designer. Most important games are Robotron 2084, Defender, Smash TV, Stargate, NARC, which is not one.
Cruisin' USA.
Yeah, let's forget NARC and Cruisin' USA and just push them off.
Excuse me.
Cruisin' USA.
Only 90s kids will remember Cruisin' the USA.
Okay, yeah. 17 BuzzFeed reasons 90s kids remember Cruisin' USA. No, but mostly known for these masterpiece shooters. Mm-hmm. Just these amazing games with quirky controls, dual joysticks. This guy didn't invent the dual stick shooter, but he perfected it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Defender, which is just sort of like trying to use a typewriter to control a spaceship in an action game. It somehow works.
Yep.
It's great. And now he's working with these guys to build another, I assume, wonderful arcadey style game, which is kind of their wheelhouse.
You know, Housemarque is, their wheelhouse, from Resogun to Super Stardust to Dead Nation. It's super exciting. I like the idea of these sort of classic pillars of video games coming back and working with like a small sort of indie studio. To be like, hey, we understand how games exist now and we've made a lot of successes, but you are also wildly influential to our medium as a whole. Yeah. So let's get together and do something rad.
That's an awesome concept.
Yeah, Resogun is Defender 3. I mean, they're so influenced by his work anyway. So this is sort of like being at a video game company that produces games that are derivative of Super Mario Brothers or Zelda and Miyamoto coming in to collaborate with you. For them, that's what this is like.
My brain went there too.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. I would love to, I mean, we should actually open that up to a discussion for a later episode of sort of like.
What pairings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what legends and sort of like newer teams do we want to see form together on a new game?
By the way, kids, go back and play Robotron 2084. Best arcade game ever.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that, actually.
Are you?
I had a Robotron 2084 cabinet that somebody was throwing out, and I just happened to be driving by when I lived in New Jersey, and I shoved it in the back of a car awkwardly and had my friend kind of like hold on for dear life to bring it home, and like didn't work very well, but it's such a beautiful machine, and it's such a great game. It's like if you like games like Resogun and you like games like Super Stardust and Geometry Wars, like go back and play Robotron because it really is.
Is there an HD remix of that I could get?
There's probably ways you can play that.
Yeah. There's a terrible PlayStation remake in 3D.
It was on Robotron 64, right?
Yeah, there was. That's right. Yeah. There was an XBLA for a while, and I think they delisted it.
Yeah.
If you want to play it, though, where we live, just go down to High Scores Arcade in Alameda. They have a beautiful cabaret version.
That's on an island.
Of it.
What if the bridges break?
Well, then go to Musée Mécanique. They've got one there, too.
But it's on the water. What if the tides roll in?
Oh, you can probably play it in a browser for free now because it's 2015.
Yeah, probably that too. Probably. Yeah, but you need two sticks to play it, right? It doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah, that's true. Well, so just get two sticks.
Yep. That's a, no, that was a good point. If you if you have cool pairings, let us know in the comments.
Yeah, let us know. What's your game pitch?
Email us.
What old man do you want to see work with a bunch of young indie teens in Montreal or Toronto?
That's amazing. So we also have a big list of PlayStation games coming out this week. The Andrew Goldfarb list of
I don't know this.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Andrew Goldfarb list of things that we love Andrew Goldfarb for.
Max, you want to read these?
Sure. I'll take
it's a big list of games.
I always appreciated his humility.
Yeah.
Man's Cross is coming out for Vita digitally. Dead or Alive 5 last round. Finally, the last Dead or Alive 5 is coming out. That's coming out PS4 digital and retail with all the bikinis that you could possibly want in a game.
Too many bikinis.
Hand of Fate coming out for PS4 digitally.
Have you guys seen the disc art for that game, by the way?
No. Sorry?
The disc art for Dead or Alive?
Is it gross?
It's like a puddle. It looks like a wet disc. I'm not kidding you. Jeff Gerstmann just tweeted this earlier this
okay.
morning.
Okay. Now I want to get it.
Yeah.
Physically.
It's a big wet disc.
Physically. Hand of Fate, Beyond the 13 Gates, at the end of the world, the game of life and death is played. Okay.
Gates.
The Order 1886. We talked about this. That's coming out for the PS4 digitally and retailily. Available on 220.
On Friday, which is weird. Why do games come out on Fridays?
To make an impression, to
make
kick the door down. Yeah.
Just
they're like, we don't do Tuesdays. Yeah. We're filmic.
This is not your grandfather's release date.
That's when movies come out on Fridays, not like games or comic books that come out on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Or movies that come out on Wednesdays.
just to get massive.
To get weekends. More money.
Yeah.
Paparazzi is coming out for PS4. What is that?
I don't know.
I think it's a game where you take pictures of people.
The celebrity runs, dashes, and hides while the paparazzi tries to take constant photos of them.
Okay, like I smell a Let's Play. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. That sounds like sneaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's Pillar, PS4, digitally. Lost in an intimate snowy town, a palette of individuals are in search of a mysterious artifact said to bring great knowledge and understanding. How are this many games coming out? This is awesome. Qbert Rebooted is coming out for PS4, PS3, and Vita.
It's
a three-way cross-buy.
Oh, sorry to interrupt.
Did you do the same thing I did, Jared, you read that headline, you said Qbert Rebooted, and then you looked at the pictures of it, and you're like, why did you do this?
Why do you have a flaccid genital for a nose on this thing?
Still,
and why does it look like a crappy
cell phone
game? You know
what's funny? Qbert is one of those characters that, like, I joked for years, like, we see HD remakes and then reboots all the time, but Qbert was one of those things I was like, nah, you can't do anything with that guy. That's just, like, he's a weird snake nose monster that fights real snakes and they fight on a pyramid and none of it makes sense. They'll never bring this. Oh, it's back. Damn it.
Yeah.
I was actually excited because this is one of those good old games that hasn't been done to death.
Yeah.
Like hasn't been remade over and over. There was a Qbert 2. It's weird. There was a Qbert 3 on the Super Nintendo. But by and large, it's not really had much done with it. And I thought there's still some room to explore. It's a neat principle. The idea of controlling territory and changing the color. But it looks like a crappy cell phone game when I saw. Maybe I'm being unfair to it.
I like it when he swears.
I like that as well.
I think it's a funny time, and I like snakes.
He was great in Wreck-It Ralph.
He was. He was wonderful.
He got a golden gold for that, didn't he?
But
he did.
The character design in the new one is the worst. I just can't look at him without being like, why?
Wait,
why
do we know? Is the new one like a take on the wrestler?
No.
It's a reimagined, rebooted version with state-of-the-art 3D gameplay and graphics that remain faithful, and he has to come to terms with his illegitimate daughter.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to cry.
He may or may not die.
And then we've got Treasures of Montezuma Arena, which is coming out digitally for PS3. Fight to survive. Help Montezuma make his way through the dark catacombs of a sinister ziggurat. 10 points for the word ziggurat in the description. That's a cool word.
Why would I help that guy? Doesn't he give people water curses?
I think, well, Treasures of Montezuma, what, like Mylanta?
Water curses.
Food poisoning is what my brain was looking for, because it doesn't operate like
water curses.
My brain is really like, if you gave, you know, this, when people get those refrigerator magnets that just have a bunch of different words, and it's just like, oh, jalapeno car.
I feel like you're going to go to France, you'd be like, pardon moi, which way to the water temple? And they're going to be like,
can I meet President Horse, please? How do I eat the sand?
And there's Trivial Pursuit Live, which is exactly what it sounds like. That's for PS4 and PS3, digitally only. If you like Trivial Pursuit.
If you want that game for free, you can play it on the side of ketchup bottles now, because that's an actual thing they do.
You can go to some diners where they have those cards on the table. I have a good time with those.
Yep. Ask for the coloring books and just draw whatever you want.
Yes.
Make a non-canonical fish.
Impress your date by knowing about 80s politics.
Fool your friends.
Go Dukakis. Okay. Demos and betas. Pillar is getting a PS4 beta if you want to know about an intimate snowy town full of a palette of colorful characters, but you're not that invested in a palette of colorful characters.
But no ziggurats. No ziggurats.
Watch out for Montezuma's Revenge. It shows up in your poop, apparently.
The water curse.
The water curse.
Yeah.
We had one last email I wanted to read, and it's from rentals@listing7.rent.com. And
all right.
It was sent to beyond@ign.com.
Yeah.
And it said, for the week of February 6th to February 13th, beyond@ign.com contacted no one, saved nothing, but we viewed two things. Evidently, we viewed the Meadowbrook Apartments in Stateline, Nevada.
Okay.
And we also viewed the Lake Vista Apartments in Stateline, Nevada.
So what you're doing here, A, is you're reading spam on the show.
And
B,
okay,
you're implying that somebody is – no, I think this is great.
I think
you're implying that somebody is using the Beyond email address to try to rent a nice waterside home in Stateline,
but
Nevada.
But they're not that hell-bent on it because they only looked at two listings.
And we know that they want – pets are okay, so I think they're worried about pets.
Who are these people? These mysteries.
I like the idea of being hacked to just casually sort of look at Stateline houses.
Hey, here's a great Redfin update. There's new listings in your area.
When they find a body under one of these houses,
yep,
we're not going to be laughing anymore.
That's going to be creepy.
Unless it's a clown.
So, Marty, thank you for handpicking that beautiful email about those two listings.
Yeah.
Head on over to rent.com to, I guess, pay rent.
Or just learn about tickets for a hot musical that came out like 30 years ago.
Yeah. If you hate the idea of owning something, go to rent.com and just then you can not have it, but still pay like you do.
There you go.
I want to own, but I can't.
Well, you should
you want a
look
piece
at
of my heart.
Look at rent.com then, because you can rent a ownership. I don't know. Anyway,
they're the IGN of stuff you can't buy.
I guess it's. I think it's time to go now, guys.
No, let's get out of here. One more segment.
Wait, one more segment. What's the segment?
It's the new segment.
The new segment. Yeah. Okay.
The new segment.
I don't know.
Is the ghost gone?
Is the ghost gone?
The ghost is dead. We killed it with our rifles.
So it's a new segment, not to be confused with the new segment.
No, it's a new segment. Time for something new.
Is it a new segment called Hang Around?
Yeah, it's called Hang Around.
Hanging there.
No, this is something we have. We have ideas for a lot of new segments.
Yeah.
But one of them that we're super excited for is called the we're calling it Beyond's Essential 50.
Yes.
Do you want to explain what that is, Max?
Yeah. So basically, we decided that there are a lot of PlayStation games out there.
Yeah.
They made a whole bunch of them over the course of four different PlayStations and 15 smaller PlayStations that could fit into different sized cargo pockets on your pants.
Yep.
So we decided that we should kind of create sort of a collection of the essential games. How it's going to work is one of us is going to show up with a cool book report about, not a book, but a game we think should be an essential PlayStation title across all the Sony platforms, and then explain what's so great about it. And then the rest of us will vote on whether or not we agree and whether or not it sounds like a cool essential thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to assemble 50 of these things.
Yeah. Awesome. And they're going to be – we're primarily doing not just first-party things, but things that are we're associating with Sony. So like something like BioShock can't be on here, or Mass Effect. But like I would say something like Snake Eater could. Even though Snake Eater went on to different consoles and handhelds, we still sort of associate that as a PlayStation product.
It got its start there.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing as Final Fantasy VII. So Jared, you're fortunate enough to be number one.
I'm honored.
Impress us.
All right, I'll do my best. So I thought hard about this, and at first I wanted to go with something that was just like a shoe-in. You know, you think about something like Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which is just has to be there, maybe the best PlayStation game ever. Or you look at something like Final Fantasy Tactics, and then I realized, you know, these are going to come along eventually. So instead I wanted to think about a game that was not the greatest PlayStation game ever, but that encapsulated what made the first PlayStation generation great. That wonderful experimental nature that cheaper media, you know, compact discs were a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they made it easier to try new things in games than it had been for a very long time. And so my nominee for Essential 50 is Square's Bushido Blade, developed by Lightweight, which is a three-dimensional weapon-based fighting game for the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. It got a terrible sequel. It's now completely dead. But it's this wonderful, quirky, small game. And how many of you guys have played it? Have you played Bushido Blade?
Okay, yeah, you have. I used to. I mean, during the PS1 era, I think I played literally every Square. I think I owned literally every Square game.
Really?
Like from weird things like Saga Frontier to Brave Fencer Musashi and Einhander.
Deep cuts.
Right. Einhander.
I was going to say, this is exactly a deep cut.
And that's. And I went, what you're doing there with the swords. Now, so you have a small cast of characters, all of which are unique, and then you can pair them up with different weapons. So somebody's not locked into the weapon that you think would be default for them. You try all kinds of combinations with them. So even though you have a small roster of fighters, there's actually a lot of different ways to go at it. The arenas are all interactive three-dimensional places. It's like a beautiful beach on at sunrise and on a Japanese coastline, or a bamboo forest like straight out of Ninja Scroll, or you know, a few just these kind of iconic locations, and you fight, but there's no life bars.
What?
No, there's no life bars at all. Instead, it's purely realistic weapon-based combat. If you slice someone in the throat, they die instantly. No. If you stab somebody to the heart, they're dead. If you nick somebody in the leg, they might limp a little. Wow. If you injure, and it slows them down. You can fall on the ground and throw dirt in somebody's face, and it'll stun them for a second. If you're a ninja type character, you might have shuriken hidden in your sleeve, and it certainly won't kill the guy, but it might disarm him for a second, or wound him, or slow him down. You can lose your weapon, and the other guy can pick it up and stab you with it, as they're laying there rolling around.
I love this concept. I'm amazed we don't get fighting games like this anymore.
Yeah,
especially now, because I know the way you're describing it, I'm picturing the coolest, most realistic. Like the vision in my head right now is like a John Woo movie, but I know it really looks like it's a bunch of triangles and squares.
It is a bunch of triangles and squares, but the art direction is good, despite the fact that it's a fairly primitive 3D game. The direction's great. So and there's not a lot of music. So like when you're the Bamboo Forest, you just hear this kind of whoosh. Or when you're on the beach, you just hear the surf.
That sounds wonderful.
And you're standing there facing each other with no background music, looking across the way, and somebody moves. And sometimes a fight lasts 3 seconds. Sometimes it lasts 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just depending on how the interaction goes.
I love that.
That game.
This is actually a game that I've been told about numerous times by different people, and I've never been able to go check it out for whatever reason. I never took the time to do that. It's funny, though, because I know that a game that actually draws a lot from it is Nidhogg.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's that same sense of, I love the idea of, so many video games are reliant on numbers. They're reliant on this kind of very finite, kind of just organized sense of, what works and what doesn't. And this sounds like really kind of loose and crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it has that same, like Jared was saying, or like a game of Nidhogg, it can end so quickly. Mm-hmm. Like with one mistake it ends, or you can have this like super tense minute-long back and forth, which is just really amazing. Also, it's insane. I mean, you hit the nail on the head when you said this was like when Sony introduced the discs, like they were able to take weird risks. Mm-hmm. We were able to get games like Parappa the Rapper and like Intelligent Cube and it's the fact that they were doing this 18 years ago, 19 years ago, whenever it came out, and we're now just getting back to that risk-taking nature on digital games, I think it's so cool and showed how progressive the PS1 as a whole was.
And that's why I chose this, because I feel like it, as well as any game, maybe better than most, it encapsulates that wonderful era. 1995 to 1999 for the PlayStation, people were trying just the most ridiculous stuff, and some of it was awful.
We call it the Clinton era.
Yeah, we're back to the 90s. Some of it was awful, but some of it was Einhander. Mm-hmm. And that's just great. And I think that's part of what makes PlayStation, without getting too sentimental here, part of what makes PlayStation kind of magical in a nostalgic way for us is that they enabled that. The PlayStation 1 let people do things with games that weren't possible before. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think this game belongs in the Essential 50. Mm-hmm. Also, it's a lot of fun. The single-player campaign's neat. They got little tricks in there. I didn't even mention this. There's like an obfuscated honor system where you get different endings depending on whether or not you're sneaky. Like, if you do, backhanded stuff in the sword fights, you can't get the good ending.
Yeah.
You throw dirt in somebody's face. Oh, tough. There's no signal. They'll tell you this. It's just like at the end, they're like, oh, you are dishonorable. Or else you just fight a guy with a gun at one point, and that sucks because one bullet kills you. But you can get him.
Is that like real life? Does a bullet kill you?
Why did you look at me? I haven't been shot.
Anyone at this table looks like they've been shot, it's
thanks,
you.
Guys.
Have any of us ever been shot? I've never been shot.
What?
No. That's not a common thing. Most people don't have that story.
Most IGN editors haven't been shot.
I would say probably all IGN editors.
I'll bet you somebody here has been shot.
Someone on the video team. They all look like dock workers.
Yeah,
they
do. Yeah.
I mean, a few people have been shot in your life. There's probably somebody in the 100 people in here. Somebody's been shot.
I don't know what the odds are or the stats on people being shot. Is it 1 out of 100?
No, so, I think it's less. Actually.
Like 1 in 1,000 people get shot.
I know that Michael on our video team got stabbed at one point.
That's like getting shot with a.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, that's shot. With
I mean,
a
getting
knife.
Getting stabbed, I feel like, is much more common. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah. More people stab people than have guns to shoot people.
Also, more people survive getting stabbed than
getting
shot.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, and they can live to tell the tale.
Yeah. Bushido Blade.
Yeah,
Bushido Blade with the swords and the guns.
Yeah.
So I submit for your approval, gentlemen, this fine, innovative little game, which it remains a crowning jewel in the PlayStation library, and will run on your PlayStation 3 if you can find the disc somewhere, because I haven't been able to find any other legit way to play it.
Is it it's not digital? Or
I don't think it's on PSN.
Wow.
No.
Damn.
Hunt that down.
I hope I'm not misinforming our audience. But
no, we're going to single-handedly spike all the eBay listings right after this episode goes live.
Yep. Well, that's a great...
The other one got cut off.
That's a great kind of entry into this.
I'm going with especially for the reason that you said, the game is rad, but also because it's sort of like it's iconic of that era. Mm-hmm. Like, it is that risk-taking era. So, yeah.
Also, Jared could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves.
Yeah.
You're very good at this.
Aww. Is that a thing?
No, yeah.
Sweet, thank you.
It's a Tommy Boy reference, you guys.
Oh, I you know,
only
I forgot about
kids
that.
Will remember that.
Ketchup jelly beans I know from A Boy in His Blob, but ketchup popsicles.
Did they ever really make the ketchup? I'm sure they did. They made hot sauce ones.
I'm sure they
probably
did. These
guys at Jelly Belly are street crazy.
Have you ever gone up there to the factory?
No, I really wanted to for years, though.
Let's go together one day. It's so much fun.
Yeah, that sounds like we're going to scare a lot of people on the way.
Not one PlayStation podcast. This is Beyond. Should I close everybody out? I'm like,
yeah, this has been great. All right, thank you guys.
It's been fun. I'm Max Scoville. You can find me on Twitter, Max Scoville. With me, Brian Altano,
Agent Bizzle on Twitter.
Marty?
I'm at McBiggity, G's and 2 T's.
I love you. You guys have the most just like cartoon teenager backwards hat skateboard names.
Yeah. Whenever we try to get an adult job.
I'm sorry, Max Scoville.
It's what it says on my lunchbox.
You sound like one of the scientists that died in Gex.
Yeah. My bad. Jared, what's your thing on there?
Petty, comma, Jared. So I'll bring it back to the boring. PETTYCOMMAJARED.
That's not an actual comma. It's actually spelled.
Yeah,
and not coma.
It's a terrible, terrible
Also,
Twitter handle.
You have a lot of letters, so people can't tweet long things at you. They can only tweet short things.
That's a sneaky trick.
Like, I hate...
Period. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Stuff.
Ketchup, lollipop. I don't know.
Yeah. That was sort of the first episode of...
Thank you, guys. That felt good.
Yeah, this was fun. I like talking to you guys.
Yeah, this is fun. Let's do this again someday.
I hope you guys enjoyed this at home. You can send us emails. It's just beyond@ign.com. Is that right?
Yeah. That's right.
And there's a Facebook group, which is live and active and full of very charming, polite, wonderful people. So
including
if you
us.
Go, yeah.
You
pop
go
in there and say hello.
There.
There's a lot of memes, so watch your step. Because it might get goofy and meme-y. Yeah. There might be lols. Is that how you say it? I don't even know. Yep. I feel really bad that I just said that out loud.
that was pretty bad.
Yeah, and of course, for all your video game news, you know, IGN.com. A lot of cool stuff. Brian and I make videos. Marty writes things. And Jared,
nobody really knows what I do around here.
You like decode the encrypted engrams of the dragon
that's
world.
That's what I do over there. Yeah. I find collectibles. Yeah. That's what I do.
All right. So. And on that note, I guess we're done here.
Yeah.
All Beyond.
Right. Beyond.
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 Beyond. Beyonce.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.